You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to the School of Influence podcast, where the queen and king of influencer marketing, authors and professors Amanda Russell and Neil Schaefer, cut through the noise and dissect what makes brands and professionals influential. No fluff, just the real deal.
Hey everybody, Neil Schaefer here. Welcome to another episode of the School of Influence podcast. Influence comes in many forms, and influence doesn't always just come from social media. This is actually the third episode where we are inviting a doctor on to interview not only how this doctor yielded influence in their own industry, but also the different ways, the different avenues they have that they can do it without even touching social media, believe it or not. So Amanda, I'm going to hand it over to you for the formal introduction.
Thank you. So I was fortunate enough to meet this guest as a neighbor when I first moved to Austin, and I was so fascinated with his backstory that it kind of kept plugging and plugging. And he doesn't know this, but I was reminded of him when a woman on a plane was talking about this leading transgender surgeon that she was coming to Austin, this was a while back, to consult with for some reason. And I was like, I know that, and that's word of mouth. I mean, I know him. And so I'd love to introduce my friend and all-around wonderful person and leading transgender surgeon, Dr. Curtis Crane.
Well, thank you. I remember the day I met you. It was like, I think it was like 2016 or maybe early 17. And I was working out in the gym with my shirt off. And you walked in and we were the only two in there. And I looked at you and I said, would you like for me to put my shirt on? Because I don't know. I want to be polite. You go, no, it's fine. And I just thought, I think this person is really intense. And within 2 minutes of talking, I found out you were like sponsored by Nike and on the way to run the marathon in the Olympics. And you found out that I was like this transgender surgeon. We're like, oh, I guess we're both psychos. Let's be friends.
Exactly. And so tell me a little bit about you, because you didn't just become like, even when I was telling someone I was interviewing transgender surgeon, I was like, who that becomes, like, what is he, transgender? And I said, no, actually, no, not like you. So how did this story come about? Because you've been doing this way before there was like this movement around topic.
Yeah, way before. It was interesting. I started getting interested in transgender surgery in 2004 and no one was talking about it. I was a urology resident at Dartmouth, and one of the things that I've always really enjoyed doing is going overseas. If you are a doctor trained in the US and you go overseas, you have a huge advantage over doctors trained in other places of the world, and you're regarded as an expert. The US healthcare system is really revered as one of the best in the world. And so it was really fun to go overseas and help just educate. And then every time I've traveled overseas, I really don't like doing touristy type stuff. You sort of get taken in by the residents and the doctors, and they take you to all the cool stuff that typical people do that aren't like listed in Lonely Planet, you know? And so you can really immerse yourself in the culture quickly if you show up under the pretenses of like, yeah, I'm a doctor, I'm here to help. And so I've traveled all over the world to 6 different continents like that. And then one of my trips was to Belgrade, Serbia, this in like 2003, 2004. And I noticed that in being there a month, about 15 of our patients were Americans going to Belgrade, Serbia for healthcare. And, you know, this is like a decade after Yugoslavia fell and the country was still kind of messed up. And I'm like, wow, Americans are kind of going to this like developing country, Serbia, for healthcare. I always really appreciated helping an underserved patient population. I had no idea there was an underserved patient population in the US. Then add to that, I think operating on genitalia is really cool. Genitalia is something that like you're not really supposed to talk about or think about all the time in society, but I think it's a really interesting part of people's body that's really important that people don't really want to talk about. So it's drawn to me. And the reconstructive procedures surrounding genitalia are really complicated. There's all kinds of congenital abnormalities that need these major surgical corrections. The GU tract is really complicated. And so there are just these really creative surgeries that need to be performed to help that. And so now here's an instance where a surgeon is traveling, likes to help an underserved patient population, finds one in my own country, and then you can apply really creative solutions that haven't really been worked out. And one of the downsides of being a surgeon is you're going to do the exact same surgery thousands of times and then you retire. And so surgeons sometimes get bored. You don't get bored with transgender surgery.
Interesting. It's interesting. What you're talking about is a little bit like when I teach a course in like thought leadership and personal branding, and we talk a lot about everybody wants basically what you have in a way, which is like really becoming this thought leader in a space, especially like a niche space. And you kind of just did your own market research and found what you call is like the blue ocean, right? This like untapped market, underserved market, and just kind of decided to jump in and own it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way it happened. If you're drawn to if you're drawn to issues that aren't in the Gaussian curve, right? You're out of the bell curve. You're two standard deviations away from what everyone else wants to think about. And then you jump in and then you create your own training program. So at my residency at Dartmouth, we learned urology. And I remember having conversations with my residency director saying, I'm really into transgender surgery. And at the time she was like, you're not learning that here. And I don't think you should learn it at all. There was a lot of bias against the trans community. And then I thought, well, I'll create my own training program. So I picked up a fellowship in reconstructive urology and had a fellowship director named Dr. Santucci that was all for it. He's like, wow, this is different. You should really consider doing a plastic surgery residency. And I was like, okay, I wasn't going to do anything else. Let's pick up another 3-year residency with a focus on microsurgery. And so he helped me think about that. And then after that, I did a transgender surgery fellowship in Europe. So then I came out of 11 years after medical school with 2 residencies, 1 in urology, 1 in plastic surgery, and 2 fellowships, 1 in transgender surgery and 1 in reconstructive urology. And so there's no one else in the world that's ever done that. And so then I was like, okay, now I can confidently say I've done all the training. I understand what a urologist knows. I understand what a plastic surgeon knows. Let's combine it and totally change the quality that the transgender community is receiving. And so it just took a few good leaders in my life to say, hey, you should do this. And now Dr. Santucci is with me in my Austin practice. He's one of the employees of the corporation. So it was like, when the student becomes the master, and he moved here and I taught him transgender surgery, and he's exceptional of it. And now I love having my former mentors to talk about really complicated problems with.
So cool.
Thank you.
I'm curious if we've heard this from others that have become sort of like thought leaders in their field, the role of a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
If that mentor was not there, would you have achieved what you have achieved today, you think?
No, it wouldn't have occurred to me apply for plastic surgery. My plan was, and that was critical. My plan was travel around the world and like pick up what I can. I was naive, but that's not the way hospital systems work. They don't like it when you show up and go, hey, I know you've never had a surgeon doing these surgeries before. And I know you've never heard about them, but why don't you let me do them? And it was having a plastics residency and having a transgender surgery fellowship where I showed up and they said, we've never had this before. And I said, I know, but I've been trained in both these surgical subspecialties and I have a fellowship. I will help you create a credentialing process that you can use for surgeons in the future. And if I had just showed up without that training, without these pieces of paper that credentialing committees really hold a high value to, then I wouldn't have been able to do it at all. So it became, it was, in retrospect, it was extremely important. And plus it allowed me to understand the art of tissue transfer, which is super, super important when you're doing these surgeries.
So after, I mean, you had an incredible understanding of the system, of the needs that, you know, you had to recreate an entire ecosystem for transgender operations, basically. But I'm curious, as you started doing that and you found hospitals that would work with you, how did you go about building up your name to where it is today? Was it just pure word of mouth, or were there any like trigger points in the journey?
It was, I would say, 95% word of mouth. It was coming upon a field that had a ton of need, and there were no training programs for it, so no one was doing it. There were a few that dabbled in it, and there used to be a program at Johns Hopkins, but it went away. There used to be a program at Stanford, but it went away. Academics largely divorced themselves from helping the trans community. So I wouldn't say I invented it in the US. I definitely didn't. There were programs in the 80s and early 90s, but when the leader of those programs decided to retire or move on, it was not taken up by anyone. And so then I kind of came on the scene, and I think what really propelled me was, it was maybe a month or two before I opened my first practice. And after all that training, I was getting my first job at age 38. And before that, I had a mechanical engineering degree, an MD, and I think I had never made more than $40,000 in a year, because I was a resident and fellow, and you work 100 hours a week and you make less than minimum wage, but that's the way it goes. And I remember sitting there and I was like, should I just take cash? Because the other main players in the US at that time were pretty much cash only. And I thought, no, you know, if I'm a true community advocate and I truly believe these are medically necessary surgeries, then that's why we have health insurance. And I think, despite what it will do to me financially, I should accept any insurance. And it was just a dialogue I had in my mind that took a little bit less time than it took me to explain just then. I thought, I'm going to work with any of them. And that was a tremendous decision. I didn't realize the implications of that decision. I just did it from a place of, you know, just having a warm heart and truly wanting to help. But when word got out that I will work with any insurance company, I think I immediately had a 6-month wait list.
So interesting. Now, like, you're, because breaking through a system and having, you know, worked in academia as well and trying to create credential program. First of all, I didn't know that you also created the accredited program, and doing all that, that takes breaking down like a lot of ivory towers and ceilings. Oh, yeah. And a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of like having to, and I think there are so many people listening to this or sitting on the other side of the you know, the table going, their field might not be medicine. It might not be, and it could be anything, but whatever you want to break through and do something new, there's a fear because of that mountain ahead of you that you're like, where do you even, like, I'm sure you got a ton of pushback and a lot of probably condescending and remarks, yeah. all of the above. What was the key to you being, what do you think were some of the takeaways that you're like, I think these are the things that helped me break through the barriers, convince the haters and the no people to give me a shot at this?
You're exactly right. I saw this, you know, those like self-help posters where they show a C and it says like
perseverance,
never give up or something.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's this one where it's like this snowy field and there's this wolf in the front and he's trudging through and he's like stamping down the snow and there's all these wolves behind him and it's easier for them to walk because there's this big wolf in front. And it says something like really inspiring about being the first in paving the way. And then it's easier for your wolf pack or whatever. That was what you're saying is exactly true. Like, first, you just got like, you're trying to do what from administrators? And then it's like, no, there's this huge community. And then it's like, well, prove to me that there's an actual community. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, I think, to answer your question, the thing to do is be exceptionally polite because you're asking for a favor. You're asking authority for a favor. Please let me do this. So be exceptionally polite, but exceptionally persistent. Be prompt. If they say, show me this and have it to me by Friday, give it to them Tuesday. Be passionate about what you're doing. Look them in the eye. Believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, you know, when I set up the practice in San Francisco and I really wanted to live in Austin, and I had every hospital in Austin say, no, we don't want, some of them said, those kind of patients here, which is, you know, really disrespectful. Westlake Hospital said, well, why don't you come here and do a presentation? I was like, foot in the door. And so I showed up, got everyone in, had the owner of the hospital there, and was just as passionate as I am about this, showed my results, educated them, you know, told some, I'm like, divorce yourself of any political agenda. You know, you have a daughter and this is the science they're showing. Like, bring it down to a human level where you sometimes have to reconstruct someone's entire belief system to allow you to do this thing. And then the owner of the hospital said, like, hey, I thought this was just going to be kind of interesting, but I actually really want you to do this at our hospital. And so it's like believing in yourself, being passionate, not taking no for an answer, and being ultra, ultra respectful to other people's beliefs. Because people are going to say you no, and you have to not be a jackass back.
You actually have more of a bit the marketing side than you know, because that's really inspiring. But you also hit on a couple of bigger one, big things. You know, you had the expertise, that the credentialing that, you know, you set yourself apart that nobody else has, that combination, and you prove the demand, which is the audience. And you can do those two things. That's usually one, you know, just to transition, you are not, like you just told us that you know, you're wet. You don't have a web presence. You No. don't do social media. And that's a huge thing in a lot of industries where it's still kind of like, I don't know if I want to do that. There's a stereotype around it. It's also not why you got into the profession. You're not a social media marketer or digital marketer. Why? Because the story you're telling us is like social media, digital marketing, internet gold. So,
yeah. And I was even going to say, I want you to respond to Amanda's question, but I'm almost thinking that you would be a champion for that transgender community, that they would want to support you as a symbol of someone that gets them, that respects them, and that you could play this. And that's where social media would come. But yeah, I'll stop there.
Let's do that. I mean, I would love to. It's getting to the point where I really need to do this. I've never done it because I've been so busy operating.
Right. This is a TED Talk. This is all of the things.
Let's do it. I'm open to it. It's really fun. I really enjoy public speaking and meeting geniuses like yourselves that are so smart in an area. Like, I literally don't know how to turn on my smart TV because it's like
too smart.
It's so smart, and you gotta like, you don't just flip around the channels anymore. You gotta like log in, and it's too much.
That's true. It is. It's difficult. No, but I think this is a really interesting, because it's like the stories like this, and somebody might not think about interviewing somebody like you, because they're like, what's your social media following? What's your whatever? I'm like, this is like real influence. Somebody that's really impacting like a movement and changing people's lives. And I think there's a gap in marketing where there is these experts and real life influencers, for lack of a better term, like the true meaning of influence, that there's like, maybe that's our job, Neil. Maybe we're supposed to bridge the gap.
Well, let's collaborate, man. I know you two would be amazing to work with. I think it'd be a lot of fun. And honestly, that's, you know, I'm always like, okay, what's the next thing for my practice, where I love hiring new surgeons and training them. And, but I know there's more, and we could get our stories out, get some of our patients out, do more online. And I've just never had anyone to guide me through it. So let's do that.
Yeah, I just think what you're doing, I mean, it's part of a bigger movement, and people want to align themselves with, you know, brands. We talk about this in marketing all the time, Amanda, but people want to align themselves with brands that care about them and care about the world and the community. And you're that in the human flesh, right? With your passion to actually do what others haven't done, and to make it a reality for so many that want to get that operation. So there's a huge, huge story to be told there on many different stages, I believe.
Well, thank you.
That last nugget of what you did, you know, with the beyond the passion, the perseverance, but the expertise, building the audience. But you also said something earlier, which is something they talk about a lot in brands and brand building and marketing, which is you humanize something that people don't really understand. And if it doesn't exactly pertain to them, it's just this like kind of this like far away, like it's those people, it's that company, it's we don't really understand it. So and you humanized it for like what you do with the director of the hospital. So I think without you knowing it, you're kind of a marketing case study.
Totally.
Neat. I like it. I don't know. It's interesting. Like it's helping the trans community brings us down to, for me, it's what is so fundamental about being human. What brings all of us together, no matter what culture you're in, no matter what religion you're in, we all want to be accepted. Even the most recluse individual wants acceptance. And, you know, we all know what it's like to be in a social circle and say the wrong thing or say something stupid or say a joke that isn't funny. And you're like, oh, you know, now they feel this way. Like multiply that by a million. And you're talking about a community that just wants to be regarded for who they really are. So that when they go to the grocery store, they're regarded for who they really are. And when someone has an image of themselves and it's not aligned with the way society views them, it causes tremendous stress. And so to me, the work that I do just helps individuals solve this basic human need, and that's acceptance.
On that note, that was very inspiring. No, and it actually helped me understand a little bit more and bring something back that I don't, you know, it's not a world that I'm in or a part of. And so it's very fascinating to hear it at the human level like that. Thank you so much. So do you have a website? Like, what is your practice called? You have offices in San Francisco and in Austin, and people come from all over the world. How do they find you?
I don't really ask. I assume the website and word of mouth. It's called
Crane. Your $2,000 website from 1995.
Yes, but I hired a new. I hired my first ever CEO. It was the first person that ever had a business degree, which at that point I thought would be important. And 2 years ago, and he helped with the rebranding, and now it's called the Crane Center for Transgender Surgery. It used to be called Brownstein and Crane. Dr. Brownstein was a doctor that worked with me for about 3 weeks, teaching me his style of chest surgery. He didn't do any work with genital reconstruction or facial feminizing surgery or any of the other things we did. So it was Brownstein and Crane Surgical Services, and then it became the Crane Center for Transgender Surgery. And we graduated from the $2,000 website and then paid someone else like 2 years ago. And now there's this other website that I think I looked at once or twice when they were building it. And I was like, yeah, it's good enough. And then I'm not totally sure what all is on there at the moment, but people find it.
Now just point them to the podcast.
Yeah. Story. We normally end our conversations there, but I'm really curious because you've achieved this like influence in this niche community. What's the future look like? Do you want to, you know, have an institution where you train doctors to do this? Do you want to brand globally? What's in the plans for the next few years?
Yeah, we would love that. Any surgeons that are interested, and we're talking to a few right now, usually they're plastic surgeons, and they say, hey, look, I've been a plastic surgeon for, you know, 10 years. I have a location. I have my staff. I want to learn transgender surgery. And we say, no problem. Come here. We'll train you. We'll set up sort of a satellite Crane Center for Transgender Surgery at your practice. We'll teach you how to do the surgery. We'll do your collections, your billing, because those are nightmares when it comes to transgender surgery. You have someone that's recorded in their with their insurance company as male because that's their gender identity, yet we're doing a vaginectomy, removing a vagina. And they're like, does it compute? Spits it out. Insurance pays you zero. We have navigated those issues for a decade, and now we're experts at it. So yeah, any surgeon that wants training, reach out.
Bring them on.
We're happy to help.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Curtis.
Great seeing you.
Thanks for listening to the School of Influence podcast. Amanda and Neil would be honored if you spend a minute to write a review wherever you are listening to this podcast to help expose these interviews to a broader audience.
Make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. Even better, build your influence and ours by sharing this podcast on your favorite social media with hashtag School of Influence. We would love to hear from and engage with you.